on completion of 40 years of the Indian Civil Accounts Service, we are bringing you an exclusive interview with the Controller General of Accounts in the Ministry of Finance, Government of India, Mr. M.J. Joseph. We would like to welcome you, Mr. Joseph, to the studios of All India Radio. I would like to start by asking you, the service is celebrating its 40th year of foundation on March 1. The Civil Accounts Organization was carved out from the Office of the Comptroller and Auditor General of India in 1976. Tell us briefly about the background in which this decision was taken and how has it helped the government in preparing its finances better?
Well, firstly, thank you very much for having me over here. It's a pleasure. To begin with, let me give you a brief background as to how this function of accounting was separated from audit in 1976. Now, when you look through history, not only in India but elsewhere, kingdoms used to always record transactions of their expenditures and of their revenues. The auditor came much later. And so was the case in India, even during the East India Company rule, when the East India Company first created the post of the Accountant General. And that was basically to put and to record the finances of the company, the East India Company, that is, of its expenditures and its revenues. Now, in Calcutta, when you go to, you would see the writer's building. Now, who were these writers? They were clerks, young boys who came out from England. And they used to write the books of accounts. So they were called as writers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the auditor came in much later. And that's because towards, I think, the end of the 18th century, the East India Company kind of felt that its civil servants were not actually recording their transactions truthfully and honestly. There was a lot of private trade then taking place. So in order to check the accuracy and the reliability of those accounting statements,
they decided
to create the post of the auditor general. Over a period of time, the two functions got merged. And that's how the office of the Comptroller and Auditor General of India emerged, which carried on even after independence for about two decades. It was only in the late or in the early 1970s that government felt that it was necessary to bifurcate and separate the function of accounting from that of the CNAG in the union government, I repeat. And that was because of two or three reasons. Number one was the conflict of interest. It was felt, and I think in my view rightly so, that the same authority or the same organization entrusted with the responsibility of making payments for and on behalf of the union government
should not also be audited.
Should not also be the auditing agency.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? So there was an inherent conflict of interest. The second was that the executive ministries, departments, etc., were not taking ownership of the payment and accounting function because this now was residing in an external agency.
When you say not taking ownership, what do you really mean?
What I meant to say is that they had no control over the release of funds, payments.
Yeah.
Now, ministries and departments are entrusted with the responsibility of implementing the mandate as voted by Parliament in the
Absolutely.
Annual budget. But when they had no control over the spending decisions and the timely payments for which those monies have to be spent, then there was no question of taking ownership, which was very important. The third reason was the need for faster, prompt, and reliable financial reporting. Now, if financial reporting was delayed and accounts were submitted more than a year, 1 to 2 years, as was the case, there was a serious problem. How would you take decisions?
So accounts were delayed for as much as 1 to 2 years before the service was taken out
after
of
the close. Yes, after the close of the financial year.
How did the government function then in terms of its monetary decisions if accounts were not closed for the previous year?
Now, it's a good question to ask. Governments used to go by provisional estimates of the final expenditures and revenues, but that's not desirable. Governments, as part of modern management accounting, governments must have control
Absolutely.
Over the accounting and payment functions. It needs quick data. It needs reliable data. It needs data to help them evaluate how is a particular program or a scheme or a project operating and functioning. If it's not functioning well, it could help them take mid-course corrections and when the accounts are closed within a reasonable period of time after the end of the financial year, it feeds into the next year's preparation of the budget because you now know the final figures.
So how has that process improved since the creation of the service? How long do we take from the close of the financial year now to close the accounts of the government?
Oh, there has been remarkable progress, I must inform you. We produce the provisional accounts of the union government within 2 months after the close of the financial year.
So the financial year closes on March 31st. Correct. So somewhere around May.
May, we are ready with the provisional accounts.
Okay.
And I can inform you that those provisional accounts are 98% accurate with the final audited accounts.
The accounts then go to CNAG for final auditing.
They then they start the auditing process. And along with the CNAG's audit report, it is then submitted to Parliament.
So this entire process, after your provisional accounts are submitted and they are audited, how long does that take?
Last year, for instance, we achieved the unthinkable. It was only for the second time since independence that the final audited annual financial statements of the Government of India, along with the CNAG's audit report, were placed in Parliament in the same calendar year. In other words, the accounts of 2014-15 were submitted to Parliament in December 2015 within a period of 8 months.
Okay.
Now, you are aware that corporate law allows companies six months to close.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, we were ready, but there is a certain process because it has to be submitted to Parliament. Parliament is not in session at that time. You know, the winter session,
right,
which is in November, December.
Yeah.
So we are trying to move ahead and try to be as comparable as the corporate sector.
So,
6 months.
So the accountability of the corporate sector is your aim in the government too.
Yes, absolutely correct. There is no reason why we should not be imbibing good corporate practices in the government sector as well, because ultimately it promotes and strengthens accountability of the executive to Parliament.
For doing such a critical function, what kind of staff strength do you have? And how is the functioning of the CAS going to be improved further in the coming fiscal 16-17?
Let me firstly tell you that we are a lean and mean organization. I have about 250-odd officers in my service with a staff strength of around 9,000 posted throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And since the last 40 years, certainly, we were one of the early government departments to embrace information technology and computerization. If you see last year's total expenditure budget, which is around 17.5 lakh crores, and of the revenues of around 12 lakh crores.
This is 2014-15?
15-16. I'm talking of 15-16, the present fiscal.
Okay.
Right? You'll see that over 95% of our direct taxes and indirect taxes collections are done through the e-payment mode. In other words, the taxes that anybody pays is paid online.
Right.
So it's not the manual process of checks and drafts that used to be the case earlier. Our systems have been designed. We operate through the banks, both public sector banks and private sector banks. So an individual or a corporate pays his tax to the banks. We monitor the flow of those funds, the idea being those funds hit the government's coffers, you know, called as the Consolidated Fund of India, maintaining the Reserve Bank of India. And a certain reasonable period of time is given. It's normally T plus 1 or T plus 3, T being the day of transaction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this has helped us to report practically on a timely basis,
right,
on a real-time basis, I would say, the status of revenues and of expenditures. And that's because we've invested heavily into information technology.
So on any given day of the month of a fiscal, you have a fair idea of both these...
A fair 95% accurate idea. Most countries in the world follow the cash basis of accounting. A few advanced countries, and I can tell you who those countries are, who have moved to an accrual-based system.
Okay.
I'll tell you why. Now, some of these countries are, in terms of population size, off too small.
Mm-hmm.
New Zealand. Population, 5 to 6 million.
Mm-hmm.
Australia, 22 million. Well, there are a couple of other countries, South Africa to some extent, Canada to some other extent, UK to some extent. If you've got to understand India and the complexities of public financial administration, we have an entrenched cash basis of accounting. Certainly, there are reasons for improvement, and we are conscious of it. I'll give you two specific areas where the cash basis of accounting is certainly weak. One is on the recording of the assets and the accrued liabilities of the government. The second is in terms of the costing of schemes, costing of services provided by the government. There are, of course, other reasons why accrual accounting is better suited.
Okay.
Better suited for whom? For a corporate-style entity.
Mm-hmm.
In India, business of government is to govern. And I don't think a decision has yet been made to move governance into a...
into the corporate style.
Into a corporate style.
So you're saying cash-based accounting is fine as of now?
What I'm trying to say is that we can never sit back on our laurels.
Mm-hmm.
There are some inherent weaknesses in the cash basis of accounting,
right,
which we are conscious of,
right,
and which we are moving towards addressing. Certainly one of the areas that we are taking up is building up the asset register of the government.
Okay.
What does the government own? For instance, how many acres of land does the Airports Authority of India own in each airport? We need to collect, collate that information base,
okay,
which would be available.
Okay.
The only thing is the valuation of that asset.
So it's only the valuation which is not available in the central pool?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
Because governments are not, you know, government has no, I don't think has any interest to monetize those assets, right? Unlike in a corporate style.
Okay.
Well, in that case, you'll have to go by the historical cost. Let us say All India Radio, where we are sitting in right now. Now, how much is Akashvani Bhavan valued at?
Mm-hmm.
So you go by the historical cost of what it then costed.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're getting into a different realm.
So you're saying these are the areas where accrual-based accounting would help?
Certainly would help, but you've got to understand there are two areas. Both are related. One is the true compilation of the actual assets.
Mm-hmm.
And I really mean the capital assets. We're not talking of revenue assets of a computer,
right,
or a chair or a,
right,
or a car or a motor car or something. We're not talking
largely
of...
largely a land parcel, maybe your...
well, land could be one. Yeah. Buildings, your equipments. For instance, take your All India Radio or Doordarshan. You have your towers, high power transmission towers, and so on and so forth. Those are your capital assets. And then you depreciate it. This is another weakness of the cash basis of accounting.
Absolutely.
We don't depreciate our assets.
So is it possible to do part cash basis?
That's what I'm
part,
getting at.
Yeah.
That's the part. You're absolutely right. We've got to move into something which is a modified version,
okay,
which preserves the inherent strengths of the cash basis of accounting, in my personal view,
okay,
but at the same time being reformative in nature and capturing the essentials or the better aspects of the accrual-based.
So is there a move in the government to do this?
Most certainly. The Finance Ministry has already in principle asked us to move in that direction.
Okay.
And as I said, 2016-17, I would be starting this exercise, certainly.
This is a very major step in the government's accounting process. So take us through, what is the new initiative here? Are you going to start some bit of accrual-based accounting?
As I said, some identified areas we have been asked to start moving towards.
Okay.
And clearly, including, in fact, I must say, the FRBM, the Fiscal Responsibility,
right,
Budget Management Act, enjoins upon the government,
okay,
you know, to have an asset register,
mm-hmm,
to better, to capture accrued liabilities so that you know in advance. Now, these are not very insurmountable problems.
Mm-hmm.
For example, how do you capture accrued liabilities?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say a particular government department runs into an obligation, let's say a contract which runs into a multi-year framework.
Right.
All right? And you know that every year your payout is going to be X, Y, or Z.
Right.
So in your sanction order itself, if we have a particular codification, it's easy for our IT systems to capture it, right? And then you're capturing at source now your future liabilities. Now, again, with the using information technology properly and judiciously,
mm-hmm,
you will be able to quickly compile information, a database of your accrued liabilities. And that's what we intend to move towards.
So it's a welcome welcome news that you're talking about moving to at least some bit of accrual-based accounting.
Nothing can be static in life, isn't it? Change is always inevitable.
The Controller General of Accounts is the principal advisor on accounting matters to the government. So through Public Financial Management System, the Office of CGA is monitoring all the flagship programs of the government. This also facilitates, I believe, the direct benefit transfer schemes. Please tell us all that PFMS caters to.
Well, firstly, I must tell you that the Public Financial Management System, called as the PFMS, has been a tremendous success. Initially, it started off as a simple tracking and monitoring system of funds released from the central government to the state government for implementing certain...
Of DBT?
No, This is even before DBT.
Okay.
Even before DBT started in January 2013.
Right.
Whereas the PFMS started, frankly, around 2009 as a plain tracking and monitoring of funds. Mm-hmm. How was it moving down mm-hmm. to the implementing agency?
Mm-hmm.
Later, it changed its scope to becoming a payment portal as well. So since the last couple of years, I think around 70,000 crores of rupees mm-hmm. have been transferred through the PFMS route. Coming specifically...
This is in the last couple of years.
Yes. Specifically about DBT that you asked me, DBT started functioning or operating the DBT scheme since January 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, almost 50,000 crores of rupees,
okay.
if my information is more or less correct, has already been transferred through this route.
Mm-hmm.
And these funds go through the banking channels mm-hmm. into the beneficiary accounts. And that provides the greatest efficiency. It reduces waste, corruption,
Absolutely.
Delays,
Absolutely.
Timeliness. And that's what the government is interested in. Intends to do further.
Now that the government is going to obviously expand DBT, I think MNREGA payments will start through DBT from April. Does that increase
Certainly does.
The workload for your
tremendously,
organization?
Tremendously.
And how do you manage that?
No, tremendously. Of course, you see, the system was not designed initially to take care of such a huge workload. So what we are doing is that we are evaluating the present system per se, and then very soon we intend to modernize it and strengthen the uh-huh. whole base so that mm-hmm. it can cater for a huge volume of transactions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
mm-hmm.
something which is work in progress presently.
Your office does a very useful service to the government of India, but in all fairness, accounts, and especially government accounts, are considered very technical. So do you think we can make government accounts a little more interesting and a little more meaningful to the
public?
You're
absolutely correct. There is a dire need to make those statements, and in fact, work has started. We've had a re-look into the existing formats. A lot of preparatory work has already taken place, I must tell you.
I see the eco survey was designed in a very different manner this time.
This time, that's very...
Economic advisor himself said that there's a lot of color now that's added to those two copies.
Correct.
So can we expect something similar?
We'll certainly do our best, but I must tell you that the final approving authority is not me.
Mm-hmm.
We work along with the Comptroller and Auditor General of India, and mm-hmm. the approval authority is the Estimates Committee of Parliament.
Okay.
Well, that's the system per se. But we will certainly do our best to present the financial statements in a more readable and simple to understand manner so that it helps parliamentarians and it helps the common citizen as well to understand public finances.
Well, it's been very interesting talking to you, Mr. Joseph. You've given us some very useful information on how the government does its own accounts and how it really helps the common citizens. Thank you for speaking to us.
Pleasure is all mine. Thank you.